This is Ashley Hodge of the Sikkim 365 Basketball Podcast, and I'm coming to you with Crash Davis, also known as Mark. Mark, thanks for being on the pod again, especially on such short notice. I wanted to preview this great matchup tonight. It's a top 25 matchup against two of the more successful teams in the state of Texas. But clearly the most successful team is playing on the home court tonight, the Baylor Bears. But I wanted to talk about Texas Tech and their success so far this year, their long history of hoop success, their upgrade in their coach over the offseason and things like that, so we can get a flavor for what kind of team that the Bears are facing tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Ashley. Thanks for having me on. If you don't mind, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Tech football, actually, before we switch to the basketball. Matt Wells was having kind of a tough time there, and on the surface, things looked pretty bleak there for a while. But I think Sonny Cumbie came in, and I'm impressed with the job he did down the stretch.
Yeah, dominant win in the bowl.
Well, they beat Iowa State. We can discuss how good of a win that is, but allegedly that's a good win.
Right.
And then, we ended up top five. They came down to Waco and really played a good game here.
Yeah.
And then they go for their bowl game and they just beat the dog out of Mississippi State. So they've got a big win over an SEC team. And I think what Sonny Cumbie came in and did is he really dispels the notion that Tech is a rebuild.
Good point. Potential Final Four team next year?
I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know if I'm ready for that. But I think clearly Big 12, favorites to be in Arlington next year in the Big 12 title game. I think there's zero reason why Joey and company shouldn't hit the ground running next year. And I wouldn't have thought that midseason, but after seeing what a good coach could do with that team, if I were a Tech fan, every time they lost next year, I'd be thinking, oh, man, did we let the right guy go to Ruston?
That's a good point.
I think expectations should be through the roof. But anyways, we can get to basketball now.
Well, you bring up a good point. And obviously Tech has a lot of the Baylor blueprint in football. Many folks have made that trip over to Lubbock to hang their employment hat over there. Joey McGuire, obviously James Blanchard. Who else? I haven't really paid that close attention. Well, James Lockhart, I think, is on their staff. There's a bookbinder. There's quite a few, but
a few of the guys, Josh Cochran, and
Cochran,
guys that left a few years ago to go to SFA.
It's. There is quite the fandom for all things Texas Tech on the Sikkim 365 message board. So
absolutely,
I'm sure many will be glad to hear that you.
They're going to be so good next year in football. And if they're not, I mean that reflects poorly on whoever's in charge over there. So
you have proclaimed them Big 12 championship caliber. So I
absolutely
football better than me. So I'm going to
if they're not in it in late November. Something's gone awry.
Well, that's something to watch for. I'm glad you alerted us to that. Well, let's talk about basketball because we do have a big matchup tonight. Texas Tech's number 19 in the country, and they are playing the Baylor Bears. They are coming off a huge win against Kansas, which is impressive because we have to remind the listeners that Chris Beard was 2-8 against Bill Self, and Mark Adams is now 1-0. And Chris Beard was also 3-7 against Scott Drew, and Mark Adams has a clean slate. So this is his first opportunity to get a chance to beat Scott Drew, the defending national champions, winners of 21 in a row, I believe. Yeah, it's 21 in a row. So it could be 22 if they're able to take care of Tech tonight. They're favored by 12.5. What do you think of that line? Is that a little aggressive for your taste?
Well, it seems like a big number to me. I think, like you mentioned in your opening monologue, Tech had a big coaching upgrade in the offseason.
Yeah.
They got the actual architect behind
the no build defense.
Yeah. Well, no, that's
he's credited for that.
That's a Scott Drew thing. they both took it from Scott Drew, if I recall correctly. But No, like I think that Mark Adams, you know, what has Chris Beard done without him? You know, I mean, going back to Little Rock, and I think Chris Beard's a good coach.
Yeah.
Supposedly, and
the numbers,
you know,
don't,
but Mark Adams has been his absolute right hand man. And I think Tech got the true architect, and you know, they're still playing hard, and they obviously had the big win this weekend, and I think he's doing a great job so far. So I don't know, 12.5. Yeah, we'll cover.
Yeah, I mean, there are some tremendous yeah, we'll cover. there are some tremendous self promoters in the state of Texas when it comes to basketball. You got to look no further than Aggieland. Buzz Williams is one of the best at promoting his brand, and you know,
well, so he's still gainfully employed there.
Yeah, I think they're off
that. Hey, good for him.
11-3, 12-2. I mean, I think they beat Arkansas. I mean, nobody pays attention to SEC basketball, but
good
but they
for
didn't.
Him. He might be coming for Billy Kennedy's all-time score win record there.
It's possible, but I mean, then you got one in Austin. I mean, nobody is self-promotes like Chris Beard. But yeah, to your point, like I think that Mark Adams might have been the substance behind those that national championship run and the run to tie for a Big 12 championship with Kansas State a few years ago. You know, so I think you're onto something there, and maybe Adams feels a little bit of, you know, freedom to take off the shackles of, you know, how Chris Beard limited him as a coach. And certainly, you know, beating Kansas is a big step because they didn't do that very often when Chris Beard was there. But that's a big win. And, you know, I think about this Texas Tech team, they're terrific on defense. They rebound the ball really well. They can lay bricks up with the best of them. I did watch that Tennessee game, and that might have been the worst 40 minutes of basketball I've seen in my life. I mean, that was something to behold.
Yeah, I left in the middle of the game. I was like, okay, I'm going to go listen to a Sikkim 365 podcast. I'm going to go down to our local park, go for a jog. I was like, this game's just not worth watching. It was really bad.
Yeah, it was bad basketball, but it was a close game and Texas Tech pulled it out. But they, I mean, you know, they, I have to say, I watched not super close because I was at the TCU game sitting in media row, but I did watch, I had my computer on.
Yeah, look at you, media row. Nice.
Yeah, man, something else. So Texas Tech, I did watch the game, you know, with one eye on it, basically. And I was very impressed with Clarence Naldani, their point guard. He had a terrific game. Ended up with 17 points, only one assist, which isn't great for a point guard, two turnovers. But he played well. And, you know, I think, you know, they're a gritty team. And if you don't bring the fight, then they can make things ugly and certainly beat you. The fact that they scored 75 points is kind of remarkable to me because they do have offensive challenges, and I think this is a game tonight where if Baylor gets to 50, they should feel pretty good about winning. If they get to 60, they should feel really good about winning. I mean, that's, but we'll see. I mean, they may be without two of their guys, Kevin McCullough and Terrence Shannon, who have been nursing some injuries for a while, and you know, who knows if they'll play. And of course, Baylor may be without Jeremy Sohan, who sprained an ankle in the game against TCU. You know,
yeah,
he's listed as day-to-day, but I'd be surprised if we saw him tonight. So, you know, what do you like about Baylor in this matchup? Do you think it's just two great defensive teams going against each other, but Baylor's on their home court and Baylor's definitely the better offense team?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. And, I mean, has been with – really, even Tech's national title game appearance that year,
yeah,
they were really iffy offensively for about half the year,
right?
And they found their rhythm, you know, to their credit, and started making shots, and you know, that's when they kind of took off. But they, you know, there's a reason they were a 3 seed, not a 1 seed.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think that's the biggest difference is we've not, you know, found our true rhythm offensively, I don't think, but, and I defer to, you know, Clavin and Rifle Bear and all those Hambone and, you know, all the basketball kind of gurus we have on the board. But just by my untrained eye, it doesn't seem like we found our rhythm offensively, but what we've seen is, you know, still, you know, way better than Tech, I think, offensively, as far as firepower goes.
Yeah, I mean, you almost want to say, now I say this, they just went to Iowa State, and you talk about how bad that Tennessee game was. The Iowa State game might have been equally as bad, but they lost that game 51-47 on the road. But then they turn around and score 75 against Kansas. Still a shocking thing to me. They held Gonzaga, who's supposedly this great offensive juggernaut. They held Gonzaga to only 69 points on a neutral court. But they only scored 55 against Gonzaga. I think that, one thing to watch, is free throws, because they do a pretty good job of getting the line. Now, Marcos Santos Silva, you want to send him to the line every chance you get, because that guy lays bricks like you've never seen. I mean, it's like, I don't even know what to compare him to. I'm trying to think of the worst free throw shooter in the Scott Drew era. He might like be in the conversation with whoever the worst one was, but anybody come to mind, like a big guy that just couldn't shoot free throws? I mean, most of the
like
bigs.
AC as a freshman,
yeah,
or,
like
you know, he got better every year, so by the time he was a senior, I think he was in the 70s, but
right,
Santos AC as a Silva freshman, if it wasn't 44%. A dunk,
right, yeah, right,
you know, if it wasn't a dunk, it wasn't going in.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Bobo Morgan was a bad free throw shooter. Don't really remember, but he didn't get much opportunity to show
The least of his issues.
But yeah, I mean, they like to get to the line, and they like to send people to the line. They play that, you know, real physical style of basketball, and lots of flopping. I'm gonna have to have that flop sign, you know, ready to go tonight for sure. Baylor's kind of the opposite. Baylor doesn't get to the line that much. And especially at home, you know, that should change with the national champions, but we'll see who the refs are tonight. But they don't send people to the line either. So that is a key stat to watch, is, you know, how many times does Baylor get to the foul line versus Tech? And, you know, Tech, I think, to have a chance at pulling off the upset, I think they're really going to make, you know, 10 or 12 more free throws than Baylor. But hopefully the refs are fair-minded and don't drink the poison. You know, it is amazing that even on their home court that they shot more free throws than Kansas. That's a rarity when any team in the Big 12 shoots more free throws than Kansas. But they shot 22 on Saturday, and Kansas only shot 18. So, they are capable of getting a little bit of a margin with free throws. But as long as you send De Silva there, it doesn't matter, because he's gonna brick them all.
Yeah, I'm ready for us to get that whistle. You know, I feel like
the home court.
You know, we've been kind of waiting, and maybe it's because our crowds are still not, you know, it's still not the crazy, you know, atmosphere that it will be when we get into the new arena, and it's going to be a little bandbox, and
right,
you know, everyone's going to be, I mean, it's just going to be insane there. So maybe that's when it will kick in. But
and the crowd tonight's probably not going to be very good. This Omicron is spreading like crazy. We got this premiere for the documentary Friday, and we've got lots of people that say they want to come, but they're sending me messages saying, hey, I got Omicron and can't come. And, you know, so the good news is it looks like the documentary is going to be socially distanced because of this. So you'll be able to have some distance between you and your neighbor.
I'll try to recruit some buddies to come into town and see if they can fill it up a little bit. But
I mean, we should have it half full when all said and done. But I think my point is that I think it's going to affect the attendance tonight too, because, you know, when they start cutting those prices to $10 and every coach starts tweeting out about, hey, I need you at the Farrell Center tonight, you know, I think we'll probably see a crowd that, you know, hopefully is as good as Oklahoma, because that was a decent crowd for a weeknight game. But those 6 o'clock tips are always tough with Baylor.
Well, the one thing we know for sure, though, is Scott Drew's going to get on the post game with Pat Nunley, and he's going to be like, man, what a crowd.
We really got energy from these guys.
Because he's just like, I love him for it, because he's going to find the absolute best out of everything. But I can't count how many times I've been in the Farrell Center. I've been like, man, we should be filling it. You know, we should have a better – showing them this as a fan base. And then I get out to my car and I turn on the post game, and Scott Drew's like, "What an electric atmosphere!" We have the best fans in the country. And I'm like, I appreciate guys who, you know, I mean, obviously it's Scott Drew to a T. He's gonna find the positive. And the new arena, it's gonna be so much better for that. Games like today, like if you only have 5,000 people in a 7,000 seat arena, I mean, that's a lot better than 5 and 10. So
right. Well, I mean, there'll probably be a decent amount of Tech fans there tonight too. And I mean, no offense by this at all to our good buddy Fuentes, because I know he holds a degree from Texas Tech and he's somewhat embarrassed about it. But I will say it's like a diploma mill. So, I mean, you have so many graduates that are Tech grads that, you know, you're probably going to get a decent amount of T-shirt fans filling up the stands.
Yeah. I mean, they've had good showings here. Not quite as good as a former football coach of ours like to hype it up, but, like 95% Tech fans or whatever that delusional dude said, but, I'm kind of starting to wonder though, like Texas used to bring a bunch of people here. Remember, like Rick Barnes, mid Rick Barnes era. And we would go in there and there would be some really good UT contingents there. And they just don't happen anymore.
I think it,
because they got beat so much.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm wondering like how long can Tech sustain this energy to come to Waco and take an L? You know, because after a while, you've got Chris Beard obviously never won in Waco while he, during his tenure. Their record in Waco over the last decade, 10, 11 years is abysmal. So, eventually you would think that their fans would kind of be dissuaded from, I'm not going and taking another L.
Yeah, I'll just watch it on television, and then I save myself the hassle of actually going into the arena and leaving sad. I agree with you, because that is it is interesting, the psychology there. Oklahoma used to be the same way. Now you see so few Oklahoma fans coming into Waco.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much every fan base. I mean, I think Kansas.
Everyone but Kansas.
Kansas still has a little bit of that, there's a chance, but maybe a couple more years of that. What happened last year, then you won't see them as much also. But, Iowa State used to bring a bunch of fans, and now you rarely ever see an Iowa State fan come to Waco, because it's just not even really conceivable that they would win in Waco. But with what you're saying is a good point. It'll be interesting to see what kind of Tech contingent. Now, they're going to be filling themselves after the Kansas win, and maybe
the timing works out well for them. They're going to be, they'll have a good crowd tonight. I'm just curious how long that can last, assuming things trend the way they've been trending. I could just see a scenario in 2 to 3 years where it's like, we're thinking back and we're like, remember when Tech used to travel here?
Right.
And they just gave up.
Right. Yeah. All jokes aside, I do have a tremendous amount of respect for how hard they play. Mark Adams seems like a great guy. We know his cousin, his great, great dude, John, who's one of the owners of Three Nations Beer. I think that they're going to bring the fight. Baylor's going to have to certainly, to me, they're a lot like West Virginia and most of Huggins teams. And if you don't bring the fight, then you can get punked. But, Baylor, mm-hmm. in the last 72 games, 73 games, has brought the fight. And very few nights have they been a little off. And so they've won 67 of the last 73 games because of that, because they come mentally ready to play, physically ready to play. And their schemes, the coaching is hard to beat. Their scouting, this is a short turnaround, but it's also the situation where, Baylor's very familiar with Tech. Tech is very familiar with Baylor. They play primarily the same style of defense. So there's not going to be a whole lot of newness to it, like the Oklahoma game where, you know, new staff with Porter Moser, who this staff had never faced before. And so there was some things that both teams did that were confusing to the other, I would say. But yeah, this game's going to be, you know, very familiar foes. And so it's going to come down to execution. And I agree with you that, you know, I think Baylor has the better offensive players to execute, but one game, anything can happen. But, you know, we will go to Waco expecting a Baylor win, and certainly the odds makers expect a Baylor win as well, putting a 12.5 spread on it. So we'll see what happens at 6 o'clock.
Sounds good.
Any parting thoughts on Texas Tech or Lubbock in general?
Nothing on Tech, but I was curious. Did you catch real quick? Did you catch the Duke game last week against Georgia?
Oh yeah, we got to talk about.
Well,
that.
I thought this was, you know, we talked a lot about this with our program, obviously, and you know the coaches being servant leaders and the players being, and I just, it's become clear to me like how big mentorship is, like how big a part of that is, you know, for coaching and for Coach K to not only take time out of his day to mentor his players, but to extend that mentorship to his opponents during a game.
Right.
That's incredible. I mean, that is what college basketball is all about. To see him, you know, go and have, you know, sometimes you got to have a tough talk with the guy. And I just have so much respect for him for taking time out of his day in the middle of a game to go lecture, you know, an opposing player. I mean, what a class act he is. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I like what he's doing. You know, a lot of people would say Roy Williams, you know, these legendary coaches that kind of quietly go away during the off season.
Right.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, they don't want it to be all about them and they're not going to go in this, you know, 4 month farewell tour, you know, where you're getting flowers every night. And
yeah,
I like that Coach K is doing this and really showing everyone what he's all about for the next 4 months. I think that's fantastic. And I know Grayson, you know, Grayson would have been heartbroken if K would have retired in the off season. He didn't get a chance to say his proper goodbye. So I'm fantastic. What's going on at Duke right now?
Yeah.
They had that big win over Miami a couple days ago. I didn't finish the game. LJ was kind of nagging me about something. I was like, fine, we can turn on whatever you want. This game's over anyways. So I didn't finish it, but they had that big win against Miami. And
I hate to break it to you. Yeah. But, Miami went there and beat them.
You're kidding me.
No. And,
are you?
And, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And it was, they used their 32-year-old point guard, Charlie Moore, who started at Cal, went to Kansas. I think he did a tour in DePaul. And now he's the point guard for the Miami Hurricanes. And
my gosh.
Yeah. And Miami's.
I thought it was over. I thought it was over.
Yeah.
I thought Duke's got this one in the bag. Wow.
Miami's all the way up to 91 in KenPom after that big
win. That was at Miami, though, right? It's tough to play on the road.
Miami North. They call that Miami North, Cameron Indoor. Yeah. But it was in Cameron.
That was it. Yeah, it was.
All right, to set the stage for those that don't know the background. So, you know, I mean, obviously, Kay was very gracious to give Dylan Brooks a lecture in the NCAA tournament after he thought Dylan showed some disrespect to his team, you know, after Oregon beat them. And then I think it was the Georgia Tech. I don't remember the player's name, but Georgia Tech was making a furious rally against Duke, and it looked like it was going to be, you know, a little bit of a competition there down the stretch. And one of the players got excitable and said something to the Duke bench like, "Yeah, let's go," or something like that. And so,
oh, the horror!
Yeah,
the horror.
So
could you imagine?
Coach K called a timeout and immediately went over to the player. And I think he said something along the lines of, "Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? And you know, you don't talk to me this way. You know, do you know who I am?" And so then after the game, you know, he went to the refs, he lobbied hard for some, you know, some severe penalties, maybe a 10 to 12 game suspension, but I don't think the refs were having that. You know, then he cornered Pastner, and he made sure Pastner, you know, did the proper kiss the ring ceremony and apologized and brought his player out, and the player apologized to Coach K in tears, and not in tears, but yeah, it was quite the scene. So
what a guy.
Yeah, that was an amazing display of sportsmanship, as you say, and it is a gift to basketball that K is able to, you know, just in this farewell tour, make sure that everybody understands the proper amount of respect and honor that is due to him. So, you know, it's going to be exciting to watch, you know, that unfold throughout the year. And I don't want to play him in the tournament, though. I mean, they do have some talent. You know, they've lost.
Got to beat them by 20.
You got to beat them by 20. We've seen what happens with officials and how enamored they get with him and that team in the tournament. So.
Oh, yeah. If they're even close in the tournament, I mean, you're toast. I'm not typically the, you know, conspiratorial type. I'm not even saying it as a conspiracy. It's just the way, like, that the refs don't even know they're doing it. Like, they're so conditioned at this point.
Well, the ACC is bad. Here's a little trivia question for you. I know North Carolina had a big one the other night, but do you know how many top 28? I'm cutting that number off at a very auspicious number. Top 28 KenPom teams there are in the ACC right now.
One,
Duke. Yeah, so North Carolina's 29. The mighty Virginia Cavaliers, who may end up winning the league somehow, some way, they're 62. Florida State's 46. Wake Forest 53. Clemson 39. So Louisville. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch
of
teams.
That's hard to imagine. You know, I grew up living in North Carolina for a little while.
It was the best basketball
during my childhood, and it was ACC was everything. Yeah. And man, I mean, that conference, talk about, you know, I mean, their football's been fool's gold for years now with Clemson kind of masking how bad that league is, and then they have one down year, and then you kind of get a glimpse into, you know, what anyone who was really paying attention already knew,
right?
Was, yeah, the ACC is not good at football. They just, Clemson is kind of SEC-esque,
yep,
or whatever. But outside of that, and then, but man, you always expect them to be right there in basketball with all those programs. And but, you know, they got a lot of great coaches. I know you're a big Leonard Hamilton guy. You really like what he does with talent. You think he utilizes it, you know, to the best of their abilities. So they'll get things going in the right direction, I'm sure.
Yeah, 8-5 this year. He's
it's a tough season.
Tough start. Big loss to Wake Forest on the road, 76-54. That was a heartbreaking loss. They also lost to South Carolina. Boy, that's a bad team they lost to. We can go down that rabbit hole, but I think. Who is Grayson's favorite this year? Is it? I think he was on the Tanner Groves bandwagon. See, I think he's a huge Tanner Groves guy now, so he may be all in on Porter Moser this year.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll have to listen to the podcast more carefully.
It's bound to be a white guy, right?
Maybe Baby Dahmer. It's not always Kansas.
He's not always a white guy, because who was it from Tech a couple years ago that he was all over?
Well, McClung, but before that, he loved McClung last year, or was he big Culver?
Yeah, big Culver fan. I mean, he's a good player, but yeah. I'm not sure who Grayson's guy is this year. He might be too tied into football recruiting right now.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, I mean, he's in heaven right now. He's got so many teams that, you know, a few of them are bound to be good. And sure enough, Purdue, Baylor, Duke, all in the top 10. Life is good for Grayson right now.
All right, the key to watch tonight is Bryson Williams and Kevin Obinor. He's an Oral Roberts transfer. Bryson Williams, I think, came from UTEP. Good players, both 6'8 guys, can stretch the floor, hit jump shots. Kevin shoots the three really well. Bryce is more of a back you down and beat you up in the post type of guy. But those are the guys. But he actually is pretty capable from 3-point range too. I need to mention that he's 41%, and actually Obinor's only 32%. He was a big part of that Oral Roberts run to the Sweet 16 last year.
Golly, 41% with Under Armour basketballs. Are you kidding me? That's pretty. I mean, just think if Tech had like a real, you know, good athletic company like Nike or
those basketballs are terrible. What a home court advantage for Tech. And some programs are smart enough to start practicing with Under Armour basketballs a few days ahead of time because it is like, you know, shooting with the FIBA ball. It's
dangerous, though. Like, if you make your kids practice with that too much, they're going to start losing confidence. Like, they're going to be like, man, I guess I just suck now.
Like, yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if Mark Adams, that's going to be a question for John, if Mark Adams is practicing with Nike basketballs the day before.
That is a good question.
Yeah, because they may get so used to those Under Armour basketballs and how they take crazy bounces off the glass and, you know, just being able to count on, you know, like four or five ricochets off the rim.
Yeah,
it is a home court advantage. I do wish NCAA would go to a uniform basketball, but that's a conversation for another day. Maybe the Baden or the Wilson Evolution, but certainly not the Under Armour basketball. That basketball is trash, no doubt about it. Well, hey, man, I'll see you at pregame, and then I'll probably see you at the game too. So thank you for doing this, Crash.
Awesome, yeah. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a Sikkim 365 podcast with Ashley Hodge and Mark Reeser, Sikkim Bears.
Sikkim.